You are listening to the Micro Effect Radio Broadcast System, the fastest growing radio network in the world. This is Raylan Allen, and my guest today is Judy Wood, and I think I've got her on the line. Good morning, Judy.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Shall I call you Dr. Wood or Judy? What would you prefer?
Whichever you're comfortable with.
Well, probably half and half. And I don't know if Andrew Johnson has called in yet. Andrew, are you there? No, he doesn't appear to be there. So Judy, let's just get started. You probably, I go to a number of conferences, and it's amazing how whenever there's a 9/11, truthers conference, your name is rarely ever mentioned, and if it is mentioned, it's mentioned in pretty bad terms. And so whenever I find somebody like that, I go to myself, this person must have a really big story that someone doesn't want us to know.
Right, and they must be over the target.
Exactly. Now, you attended the Virginia Polytechnic Institute, otherwise known as Virginia Tech or VT. That's where you got your Bachelor's of Science degree in Civil Engineering, a Master's degree in Engineering Mechanics, also known as Applied Physics, and then you went on to complete your PhD in Material Engineering Science at the Department of Engineering and Science Mechanics. And this is still at VT, right?
Yeah, Virginia Tech.
And you completed some of your PhD work at the State University in Blacksburg, Virginia.
That's the same thing. It's in that university. Virginia Tech, Virginia Polytechnic Institute and State University, VPI and SU.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes pronounced VPSU. It's all the same place.
It is. Thank you for clarifying that, because it does sound like it's, about three different universities in one place. But your dissertation involved the development of an experimental method to study the effects of heat on joints in structures, which are made of two different materials. I mean, it seems that your thesis, was perfect for studying what happened on 9/11.
Well, my whole background seems to be, in every aspect of it, essentially seems to be geared towards this. Folks normally wouldn't guess that right away, but even my the experimental method that I have my expertise in, which is Moré interferometry, an optical method using interference of electromagnetic waves,
yeah,
in the visual range. And so interferometry turns out to be part of what happened on 9/11.
Well, before we get too far into 9/11, I just have to comment on Virginia Tech. That was where, Mr. Chong, or whatever his name was, killed 32 students and faculty. What do you make? I mean, it's kind of a strange connection.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
You don't like to, I guess, talk a lot about it because there's a, I guess, a lot behind it.
And in what way is there a lot behind it?
Well, whoever pulled off that job, we don't want to give them pats on the back.
You don't want to what? I couldn't
give them a pat on the back.
Uh-huh. I understand.
And promote their deed.
Yeah. I don't know if you are aware of, but in deep conspiracy circles, and this has gone on for years, 20, 30 years, VT and Blacksburg has been considered a CIA training ground, specifically to create the Manchurian candidates. And that's what I feel the shooter was. But there's another really famous fellow from that area that's been in jail for, he was on death row in Texas, And for some reason, George Bush, when he was governor there, commuted this man's sentence. And many people believe that he was a CIA assassin, and that was the reason the sentence was commuted. But he was from Blacksburg, Virginia.
Mm.
And so when that story came out, and it came out, as I said, about 20 years ago, I can't remember the guy's name, but he was a well-known serial killer at that time. And so all of us in the conspiracy world focused on Blacksburg for a while. So when the shooter happened, you know, it wasn't a big surprise to any of us that, of course, it was coming out of BT. Now, while you were there, did you notice anything funny, any CIA or government people around?
No, no, I didn't. But as for the event, it made no sense to me when it occurred. Well,
yeah.
The connection was pretty obvious. But why people would sit in a room and wait to be shot?
Yeah, it does sound kind of
like
funny.
Like they were stunned from some other source. And we used to climb up, I didn't, but somebody else would climb up when they're late for class and climb in the window. You can go in and out those windows pretty easily because it's easy to climb on those stones. We call it hokey stone.
So in other words, the students could have just leaped out the windows.
Right, right. One side of the building, it's only like a half a story down. It's not a full two floors up. The floor below is kind of like halfway underground. The other side is full, two stories, and there's bushes. But the stones are very knobby.
Mm-hmm.
You know the kind of stone buildings that there are. They're easy to climb on.
Right, right. And so, you know, I just heard you say one thing, but do you believe that the students may have had some sort of electronic mesmerizing going on that made them sit rather than flee?
Well, there's one particular classroom, supposedly the shooter went in three times.
Uh-huh.
Does it make sense to you that students will be, you know, held up under their desk waiting? And
no.
You know, somebody comes in and shoots, and then they go back out, and the person just sits there, and then the shooter comes back and shoots some more, then leaves, and the person sits there, and then they come back in the third time. The people are going to just sit and wait?
Wow. You know, in the late 70s, I was married to the Dean of Science and Engineering at the Naval Postgraduate School, and he was the one that created the curriculum on electronic warfare. And we were entertaining some of the scientists from around the country on electronic warfare. And there was a woman from Hayward that came down, and she got extremely drunk. And, we're all around our dining room table, and she slammed her fist down on the dining room table and yelled at her colleague with which she was having a verbal battle, if I wanted to flip a switch in Hayward, California, I could have everybody on their knees begging, or I could have them out in the street singing, or I could have them, whatever. In other words, she gave a whole list of things that because she had created this electronic weapon and it was ready to go online, she could just literally make people do anything she wanted them to do. And so I know that weapons exist that can do things like this.
Well, I think we all can imagine something like that, but just looking at the facts of the case, you have four rooms and one shooter, and people
right.
are just sitting there waiting to get shot. It kind of doesn't make sense. And also, you get 20-year-olds, they're, 20-year-old guys are immortal.
Mm-hmm.
They like to rescue people.
Yeah.
They save the day. You get a trash can put over the shooter's head. There you go.
You know something, I'm going to tell you this, and probably by the time we get around to searching the archives, if it was done with an electronic weapon, there's a real possibility that whether radar will have picked it up. And I don't know whether there are any, whether radar images still left around, but I do have weather radar of an electronic weapon. And so I know that we can do that. But let's get on to 9/11, because today is the...
What was interesting about that day, April 16th,
mm-hmm.
The following day we were going to submit our legal case for the QTAM case against the contractors.
Okay.
For the NIST report. So needless to say, the Virginia Tech thing postponed it, but a week later we got it submitted.
And so was this... what kind of submission was it?
This is the legal case that we have against the contractors for NIST for fraud.
Okay.
They committed science fraud.
Now, are these the contractors that were doing the tests out in the desert where they were melting?
This is for, Congress mandated NIST to determine why and how the World Trade Center towers collapsed,
mm-hmm.
and gave NIST a bunch of taxpayer money to do so.
Mm-hmm.
They hired contractors to help with the report, to do various analyses and computer modeling and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And these contractors happened to be manufacturers and developers of directed energy weapons.
Oh, my gosh.
Some of them. And anyway, there's a variety. It's, I think, 23 different defendants.
Yes.
But one of them, Underwriters Lab, built a mock-up of one of the floors, a complete full-scale mock-up. Well, two. And then two half-scale mock-ups. They put them on fire each time, and twice the temperature in degrees F for twice as long, and they could not get it to fail the support load.
That's extraordinary.
And four out of four tests, and they had to call a test because they'd been there for 4 hours and they couldn't get the thing to fail the support load. Yet they signed off on a report saying the fire did it. That's fraud.
Oh boy, it certainly is. You know, I saw one of those simulations, and in the voiceover of the simulation, it's like it's telling you one thing, but you're watching something different on the screen. Is this the same one? Did they actually make it into a video?
I don't know what about videos and so forth. I just know what they reported.
Okay, because Richard Gage, the one that has a completely different version. I mean, don't you love all the different versions and how all the different people with all the different versions, really attack and fight and, slime the other people. But
I don't understand why, because we all should be interested in the truth and there's only one truth.
Well, that's my belief. I've had a web page for almost 13 years now, and the one thing that we all realize is no one is the owner of the whole truth. And so if we can just all work together and cooperate and bring our bits and pieces in, then hopefully by analysis we will get to the truth. But boy, that sure isn't the 9/11 truth movement.
You're assuming that the 9/11 truth movement is for finding the truth.
You are absolutely right.
You ever heard of controlled opposition?
I certainly have, and after this quick break, we're going to come back with Dr. Judy Wood and the controlled opposition. You are listening to Raylan Allen from RumorMillNews.com, and you are listening to the fastest-growing radio network in the world, The Micro Effect. And welcome back. You're listening to The Micro Effect. This is Raylan Allen. I'm talking with Dr. Judy Wood, who probably has the best background of anyone alive, except other people who have gone through the same curriculum to get their PhDs that she has had, to actually analyze what went on 9/11/2001. And we were discussing the truth movement, the 9/11 truth movement. And there is so much backstabbing and friction and fighting. And Dr. Wood, you were just saying, have you ever heard of the controlled opposition?
Right. The way I see it is, I started out naively into this, but I quickly realized that if you have a crime this horrendous, such an event so huge, it's going to take a lot of planning. But don't you think the cover-up is going to take even more planning?
Well, that's what I would say. I would think, and I would think that the cover-up had to go hand in hand with the planning of it.
Yes. And, you know, something as visible as the truth movement has become, would the perpetrators allow that?
Well, I've wondered about that, too. And do you know that I have not heard of the death of any of the 9/11 truthers? Have you?
Heard of what?
The death. You know, in so many of the things, you know, I work to uncover the October surprise, and there were many of our people who were murdered during this time. And, of course, you know, people trying to investigate the Clintons during Clinton's presidency, there were probably 50 or more people that suddenly died under mysterious circumstances. But to the best of my knowledge, I don't know of any 9/11 truther who has died.
There were some, but maybe they weren't part of the official movement. I call it the movement towards the official truth.
Right.
The official truth movement. I don't consider myself part of that. I feel like, you know, the only way to go is independence.
Well, I agree with you, and that's why Rumor Mill News has stayed independent. We just sort of hang around with ourselves in our little community. And I was just advised that Andrew Johnson has joined us.
Oh, great.
And so welcome, Andrew.
Thank you very much. Hi.
Hi. I just listened to the video that you and Dr. Wood did at that radio station in New York. And I posted it, and so hopefully after our interview is over, people can go in and watch that. Dr. Wood, I want you to describe and explain to the audience how your academic and technical experience is important in your research into the events of 9/11, because as I started off with, I don't know of anyone who has more of a background, except other people who have the PhD in exactly what you have.
Well, I think the biggest difference is I'm trained to observe physical phenomena. And the whole key with 9/11 is truly observing what's going on rather than following, you know, like b-ball. Have you heard that term?
No,
you know, like a swarm of bees. You know, little league soccer and so forth, the kids all swarm around the ball.
Right.
Bee ball, like a swarm of bees.
Uh-huh.
And the 9/11 truthers tend to play a game of bee ball.
Mm-hmm.
And one gets an idea and they all pile on. It's the end thing to do, and they get led wherever they get led.
Right.
Few people look and observe. And if you just stop and look and think for yourself, the answer becomes very clear. It's very easy to see, but you have to look all by yourself. And the whole thing with 9/11, and I've learned a lot about psychology through this, is that, there's a funny echo in the background, is that the psyops, how it works, is humans need answers to questions. And they'll ask questions and keep thinking about possibilities until they get an answer. So if you immediately give them the answer, they quit asking questions. Give them some answer. So what we got on 9/11 was answers. So people quit asking questions. Before noon on 9/11, I remember my graduate student came up to me and said, Dr. Wood, what's Al-Qaeda? Who's Bin Laden? The moment I'll never forget. This was before noon. Why did they already know, you know, who done it before they did an investigation?
And what was so funny is just months before, a newspaper had reported that bin Laden was in the hospital possibly dying from kidneys, and either he needed a kidney transplant or he needed, you know, permanent dialysis.
Right.
Now, can you see this man on the run with, you know, with his dialysis machine running everywhere with him?
Well, you know, to me, I call that he said, she said, who said, what said, you know.
Uh-huh.
But I like to look at physical evidence. And when people are given answers, they quit looking at the physical evidence.
Yes.
You know, like they're given a name, so they think the crime's solved, so they quit looking at the evidence. And they swallow it.
Quite early on there were certain people who were saying, as regards 9/11 research, that we shouldn't be looking at physical evidence. There was one particular person who I can think of who said that quite candidly, and that was Mike Rupert. And I always thought that was quite strange. And I think with Dr. Wood's credentials, she has got a lot of experience of looking at physical evidence in terms of the experiments she's done and the research she's done prior to the 9/11 research. And I think.
And hold on just a moment, Andrew. We're going to come right back to you, so don't forget where you are. And I want to give a big hey to all of the Tea Party members there in Idaho, where the micro effect is being broadcast live during the Tea Party. And this is Raylan Allen of RumorMillNews.com, and I will be right back here on the Micro Effect Radio Broadcast Network. You are listening to the Micro Effect Radio Broadcast Network. And today, the Micro Effect is broadcasting live from Stites, Idaho. And if there are any listeners in Idaho, there is a two-day event going on. It's a tea party and more. It'll be going on until 7 p.m. tonight and until probably 7 p.m. Saturday night. So if you're anywhere in Idaho, get yourselves to Stites, Idaho. And today we're talking with Dr. Judy Wood, and we're talking with Andrew Johnson, and we are talking about 9/11, and we are talking right at the moment we're talking about why there are so many different stories about what happened, and why many of the 9/11 truthers literally fight and wish to destroy, professionally destroy people that they don't agree with. And so, Andrew, you were talking about this. What were you saying?
Sure, yes. When I got involved with this about 5 years ago now, as I mentioned, there were people who didn't seem to think that looking at the physical evidence, such as the way that the towers were destroyed, was a good thing to look at, because, and this was particularly true of Mike Rupert, who wrote this book, Crossing the Rubicon. And so when I came across Dr. Wood's research, which was essentially, I'd say probably 99% based on physical evidence, I became very interested, because that was the approach that I'd initially adopted in my own sort of take on this. I thought, well, we can look at the towers and we can look at the way they were destroyed, and that can't be refuted. That's something that surely people can agree on, that they can, you know, the towers, as Dr. Wood says, you know, the towers were there, you know, at 8 in the morning, and by 12 in the afternoon, they were completely gone. Surely we can all agree on that. You know, we don't have to get into put options and whether it was people were able to get on the planes, you know.
Right. Well, Dr. Wood, you know, a lot of people describe the towers as collapsing, but you've explained that they didn't collapse. But I saw them collapse. Can you explain it?
I've gotten a lot of grief for that, and I still stand by it. I think it's becoming more accepted that the towers did not collapse. They didn't have time to collapse. Here's a test. How many times can you clap your hands in 10 seconds?
Oh, gosh.
Can you clap your hands 110 times?
I don't think so.
There's 110 floors that went away in less than 10 seconds.
So if they didn't collapse, they disintegrated?
They turned into powder.
how? How can you describe
the molecular basis of the material was disrupted. Molecules usually are attracted to each other.
Yes.
What happens if you have a way of suddenly making them repel each other?
You would have to have some sort of technology that actually destroyed the very atoms and molecules, or the molecules.
It doesn't destroy them. It reverses some effect that they have by reversing, you know, a gravitational field, whatever you want to call it,
mm-hmm.
around it. How I came to this realization was looking at that tipping top of the South Tower. Just as it starts to tip, right around the hinge, suddenly the building just balloons out into like a steam explosion.
And think for a moment, if that thing had continued to tip, what other buildings would it have hit, and would it have created a domino effect?
Oh, that the beauty of that direction, and I was thinking of, for both towers, there's, you know, four different directions each one could tip,
right.
So there's eight altogether. That's the one, the first one, that would be the safest place to go, because it's building four below, and that's all it would affect.
Oh, that's very interesting.
But building four disappeared. It was essentially gone right down to the ground, except for the north wing, which looked like it was surgically cut off.
Now, wait a minute. I've never heard anything about building four before.
Well, this is it. I mean, this is one of the things when I came across Dr. Wood's research, I found that she had such a lot of pictures which I'd never seen before, and it presented some very simple, basic problems, such as you just mentioned there. Where did the other buildings go? All we were shown was initially the two towers, and then later we found out about the, you know, tower number seven. But as Dr. Wood has just been mentioning, and what happened to the other buildings too? We can't just ignore those. Those in themselves were quite substantial structures.
And so, Dr. Wood, can you please continue about building four?
Building four is kind of an upside-down T, where the long part of the T is in line with Tower 2 and about the width of Tower 2.
Uh-huh.
And then the stem goes north. That stem was cut off and remained standing, but the rest of the building, just about down to ground level, was gone. You could sweep it up. A few days later, after they took away the few wheat checks, that's what I call the chunks of steel, the prefabricated
uh-huh.
sections, there's nothing there. You could drive over it. It was smooth. No building.
That is just amazing.
The building went AWOL.
And as I said, I thought I knew most of the theories about 9/11, but I certainly didn't know it about this one. That is.
I say I don't have a theory. I just show evidence.
Uh-huh.
You don't need a theory. You have physical evidence, and that is fact. And then you need to come up with an explanation as to how it got that way.
Right.
And it's easy to test. You keep looking at what, you know, satisfies all of these phenomena.
And so what does satisfy all of these phenomena?
Well, I kept looking because I didn't know. I just kept looking at the data. As I say, you keep looking at the data, and you listen to it real carefully, and it speaks to you. It'll tell you exactly what happened. If you don't know what happened, listen to the data more. So I would just keep looking through it and looking through it, and I had different phenomena I categorized. Different weird things that instead of assuming the cause, I would give it a generic name, like fuming, fuzz balls, fuzzy blobs, toasty cars, just lots of names that are just generic, so that we don't make an assumption as to the cause. Like, you don't say smoke because you're implying it's caused by fire or heat. I say fumes because you see stuff coming up.
One of the problems here is that because people had already been given a conventional explanation for 9/11, in that, you know, planes crashed and the buildings fell down because of the fire and, you know, the variants of that. That stopped people from doing what Dr. Wood has done, which is looking at the data and observing it and seeing all the unusual properties. They just saw the buildings come down, they knew it was a plane crash, and that explained it. And as Dr. Wood said earlier on, they were given the explanation, that explanation satisfied them, so they stopped looking. And that's why it's so difficult to kind of reopen people's curiosity, because they haven't seen the data, they haven't seen it.
Now, you've described what you think happened as the Hutchison effect. And I know John Hutchison, but I've never been able to understand his Hutchison effect. But it seems to me that you're saying that to accomplish this, there had to be some sort of directed energy beam?
What I define as directed energy weapons is energy that's directed and used as a weapon.
Okay.
In the most general form, we know it was directed. You had circular or cylindrical holes cut out of buildings, like a big post hole digger.
Yes.
That's very directed. Vertical, mm-hmm. cylindrical cutouts.
Mm-hmm.
This wasn't random energy. So it was directed, involved energy, and it definitely was used as a weapon. It was not kinetic energy. It wasn't like a projectile or a bomb or, you know, something that physically goes and hits something.
Now, if there was such a weapon, where would it be? Who would have it?
Well, first of all, to understand the process, it's so tempting to want to jump to the answer.
Of course.
As I said in the first time I presented this information in 2006, I showed up a slide and said, okay, what happened? Eeny, meeny, miny, mo. We have, you know, slingshot, BB gun, firecracker, and thermite. Those are all the things I know about, so it's got to be one of those. Let's pick. Eeny, meeny, miny, mo. That's not scientific. What you do is keep listening to the data until it tells you. And I did not know about directed energy weapons until I started looking at the evidence. But the evidence told me what it was. What I knew from my experience in optics, I saw a direct analogy and realized there must be an interference happening on a different part of the electromagnetic spectrum, not in the visual range, because of various phenomena that I saw. And then pretty soon things started adding up. And after I saw all of these various phenomena, I still didn't know what it was. I'd never heard of it, you know, any weapon like that before. But now I knew it existed because everything was consistent with it. And then one day I happened upon, I was looking at that tipping top and realizing that the building is kind of like water when it turns into steam. It expands in volume by 1,600 times. So you get 1 cubic inch of water, it occupies 1,600 cubic inches of steam. And suddenly the water needs to expand. Well, gee, it looked like that's what the building was doing. What would make suddenly all the molecules repel each other? So I started doing a search on that, and I came upon this blog of John Hutchison, where he had an article about the Casimir forces, which is, you know, attractive forces on a very small scale. And then I started looking at some of his pictures, and I'm like, oh my gosh, there's a one-to-one correlation with all of the phenomena I see at Ground Zero. There's a, you know, a parallel. And so I made this series showing, you know, here's John's pictures, here's Judy's pictures, you know, just back and forth. And it was so direct of a correlation. And then
in other words, you took pictures that were probably on the internet of things that happened to the World Trade Center, and you compared that with John's pictures, and I've seen them, I think most people have, of the experiments that he's been doing over the years. Is that what you did?
Yes. And you know the particular one where it's aluminum bar, a big thick aluminum bar that's kind of splintered open?
Yes, I know that one.
that's the first time I saw something that explained what happened to these cars. That looked like the doors had a split thickness and delaminated, and the outside curled down. You know, those are not laminated structures, the doors. So what would cause steel to split halfway through the thickness and peel out? And then here, you know, John had done that.
Well, I thought he did it with magnetic energy, something connected to magnets.
No, not directly. He's got a Van de Graaff generator that interferes it with, like, microwave beams, different radio frequency signals. And it's an interference of different types of energy fields.
Uh-huh.
If people want to find out more about that side of things, I've just essentially finished a new website for John Hutchison, and people will find out the reason why he has got a new website if they go to thehutchisoneffect.com, and you will hear interviews with John Hutchison. I know you said you've had him on your program before.
Not on this program. He was a rumor mill news agent for a while. And we've still got one of his pages. I think I made the first website for him, and so I've still got that. And folks, it's Hutchison, not Hutchinson. There's no N in it.
Excellent.
Correct, yes.
And so what's the name of that website again?
It's just thehutchisoneffect.com.
Okay, good.
And you can download video and audio and all kinds of stuff. There's some documents there. Which people can read, and some of it is sort of a little bit, you know, difficult to understand, because, I mean, John himself, he knows how to do what he's doing, and he can repeat it. There's this myth that he can't reproduce it, he can't repeat it. That was the case 20 years ago, but now when he's got all his equipment set up, he can reproduce it every time within sort of 5 minutes.
That's incredible.
So, you know, a lot. You go onto Wikipedia, for example, and I'm sort of going off the point a little bit, but it will say, it can't be valid because it can't be scientific because you can't reproduce it, and this isn't true.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just to rerun over what Dr. Wood's been saying as regards the data, in other words, she went and looked at the data for 9/11, gathered an enormous amount of it, and then she had seen the Hutchison effect data separately, and she tied the two together and found that there was a one-to-one match. And that's kind of how I was sort of involved, as kind of being a sounding board, if you will, and a bit of a backroom boy, as I said last time I was on. And that's how I got involved with this, and how we ended up going on to the Ambrose Lane program, and how, you know, the video that you mentioned earlier on. And
right.
I think the thing that really, really sung it for me, and, you know, got it for me was the inverted cars, and we exchanged this data and you know,
I remember that day.
And she says, oh, you know, she remembers my reaction, because seeing the upside down car, the inverted car, I knew that was an effect of the levitation,
I kept asking
Andrew, why is that car upside down? Is that a parking problem that they had there, or what? And then it clicked, like, oh my gosh, the car is upside down. And, yeah, and the trees still have their leaves on them.
Wow. And so how did that happen? How did the car get upside down, and why, in the midst of all that destruction, would the tree have still remained with the leaves on?
Mm. Well, again, you know, you have to try and go through the explanations logically. Let's look at the explanations for an inverted car. Well, we could say it was a blast of air, but if it's such a powerful blast of air, we know that we need a wind speed of perhaps 50, well, at least 50 miles an hour, very, very minimum, probably more like 100. So did we see any other evidence that we had winds of 100 miles an hour during the destruction of the towers? And I don't think we did, and the leaves being on the trees is a contraindication of that. So it doesn't look like it can have been a wind or a blast effect. That's more or less ruled out with the other evidence that you see at the scene. So that goes out the window. What's the next explanation? Well, okay, so let's imagine that they were doing some salvage type operation, and they had cranes coming along, and they were grabbing hold of the car and turning it upside down with a crane. Why would they do that? What reason would there be to actually physically turn a car upside down with a crane? What would be to rescue somebody? Would you get a crane and turn a car upside down to rescue somebody? Would you get a crane and turn a car upside down to move it out of the way? Surely you would put it the right way up if you're moving it with a crane. The whole idea that it was moved with a crane becomes pretty ludicrous. So what other explanations are left?
Yeah, there were no cranes around at the time.
Right. At noon on 9/11, there weren't any cranes there.
Doctor Wood, you also talked about a toasted car. What did you mean it was toasted?
That's my generic term for cars that are totaled. You know, they're toast. They're history.
Okay.
They're not repairable. I don't know exactly what happened to them. You know, that was just sort of a placeholder. I'm not saying they're burnt, because
right.
That implies that I know the cause. There's just weird things that happen to them, you know, like the split open door, you know, split halfway through the thickness and peeled down. There's, you know, half disintegrated, half there. There's engine blocks missing, door handles missing, no bumper, no windows. There's these weird phenomena that you start noticing with the cars. And, like, this car in FDR Drive, which is about a half a mile away, it's got a brand-new wax job at the back end, and then completely toasted in the front end.
Oh, my heavens. Do you know, when I was examining photos of the Murrah building, I saw some cars that had that same effect.
Exactly, yep.
And so do you think that the Murrah building could have been taken down with an energy beam weapon?
I haven't studied it very carefully, but when I gathered some of those pictures several years ago, by golly, it grabbed me these toasty cars.
Yeah.
For no reason, like the roof of the car, it looks like it's on fire, but it's a baby blue car, and the car is pristine. Like, why would that car be on fire over there?
Huh.
And then I noticed cylindrical cutouts in the building. You know, vertical cylindrical cutouts, like a big post hole digger. And there's a photo I have on the front page of my website of the inside of Building 6 at the World Trade Center and the Murrah building. And you can't tell the difference between the two, except one of them has wheat checks at the bottom.
Extraordinary. So that's right on the front of your webpage.
Right. About halfway down the page.
Okay.
I think it says something like history repeats.
Absolutely. So what we have to suspend our belief that the government is telling us about all of the weapons that they have in their arsenal.
Well, they have classified weaponry. You can assume that.
Right.
But we don't know who did it. We don't know. If our government or some other government or some rogue group somewhere around the world did it, we don't know who did it.
Hold on to that thought.
Okay.
We don't know who did it. You are listening to the Micro Effect Radio Broadcast Network. I'm talking with Dr. Judy Wood and Andrew Johnson, who's calling in from England. And I want to give out a big hello to all the people there in Sites, Idaho, who are listening live to the Micro Effect. And if you are in Idaho, if you're in driving distance of Idaho, of Sites, Idaho, get over there. There's a tea party going on. And the Micro Effect is going to be broadcasting from there for the rest of the day and for tomorrow, too. And we will be right back. And you are listening to the Micro Effect Radio Broadcast Network, coming to you today and tomorrow from Sites, Idaho. This is Raylan Allen, and I am talking with Dr. Judy Wood. And, Andrew, before I get back to you, I want one of you to give Dr. Wood's website so people can pull it up if they are near a computer.
It's drjudywood.com. That's drjudywood.com.
Okay, and right before, we had been talking about directed energy beams or possibly space beams, and Andrew, you were just starting to...
Space beams?
Well, is a space beam the same as a directed energy weapon?
Space beam is a derogatory term used to downgrade what I'm doing.
Okay.
What is important is I'd like to stress we first have to figure out what happened before we can figure out how it happened or who done it. And a lot of folks start out with a whodunit, but you have to determine what got done.
Right.
And how it got done. If you have a dead body and you have somebody standing there with a gun and you want to arrest them for murder, but the body doesn't have any bullet holes in it.
Dr. Wood, my board man just asked if you could get a little closer to your telephone because he's not able to, you know, adjust your volume so everybody can hear.
Okay, we need to first figure out what happened before we can figure out how it happened and then who done it.
Okay.
So it's important to stress, you know, looking at the evidence to figure out what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so many folks want to jump immediately to the whodunit,
mm-hmm.
but the example I gave was if you have a dead body and someone's standing there with a smoking gun, some people will immediately want to arrest them for murder, but you have to see if the body has bullet holes in it.
Right.
If the person was poisoned, you know, why are you arresting this guy for, you know, shooting him to death?
Mm-hmm.
You need to figure out what happened first. And so let's look at the towers and figure out what happened. And look at, you know, all of the evidence to determine what happened. That was the issue on 9/11, that people were told who done it immediately.
Yeah. And so
they knew what got done.
No one asked any more questions. It's almost like you could go back to sleep.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a case solved. And the same thing is true with the thermite business. Yeah,
well, you know, a lot of people talk about thermite, nanothermite, thermite in relation to 9/11. Can you explain why it couldn't have caused the destruction the way we saw it?
It doesn't explain any of the evidence.
Okay.
Any of it at all. For all we're concerned, you know, let's say, we found traces of rubber and traces of sugar in the dust, and those are used to make bubble gum. So therefore, bubble gum had to destroy the towers.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
There's no difference. You have to show how thermite could have even done what got done, and it can't. The thermite does not turn things into powder.
Mm-hmm.
It melts things. And you need an awful lot of it. You know, you need so much of it that the weight of it would have destroyed the towers. You know, before it got ignited.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not explosive. It melts. It doesn't explode.
The pictures, if people remember the pictures of what was called the dust coming out, when I first watched them, it reminded me of a volcano. And when a volcano starts to erupt, it's just really small, and then it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Is there any similarity between...
Oh, my gosh. You have, you're a very good observer. There is a lot in common with a volcano.
Okay.
People normally wouldn't assume so. But what I've started noticing with volcanoes is you have lightning and you have magnetism.
Right.
The particles coming out of a volcano are magnetic.
Yes.
Based on, I think, the field effects occurring there. You know, there's something else that causes the field effects, but I believe the destruction, you know, the powderization is a field effect. It's a result of a field effect.
Now, I'm not smart enough to know what a field effect is. Can you explain that to me?
You know what a magnet is like?
Mm-hmm.
That creates a field. You put a magnet under a piece of glass.
Right.
And on top of the glass, you sprinkle a bunch of iron filings.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll make a pattern between the North and South Pole.
Okay.
That shows you the field lines.
And since you know that now, what pattern, or how big of a pattern, was the field effect on 9/11?
Well, that what I gave you is an example of a magnetic field.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of different kinds of fields, but you don't necessarily see them. For example, radio waves.
Mm-hmm.
Or remember in the days of rabbit ears on for the television, an airplane would go overhead, and it would interrupt your reception on the TV?
Yes, I remember those days.
Yes, that is a field effect from that airplane. You didn't see that airplane reach down and touch your TV, but it interfered with the signal coming from the TV station to your TV set.
Okay, let's go back to the volcano.
Okay.
And let's bring in something that I will make you a bet that 99% of my audience does not know about. And that's the fact that Hurricane Aaron was sitting, a hurricane that was supposed to be as big as Hurricane Katrina, was sitting, what, less than 20 miles?
It was more than that. The thing was about 500 miles in diameter.
But how far was it? Because there's that shot from space where you see the hurricane and you see the smoke coming up out of the WTC.
Right. The outer bands of the hurricane were right over the end of Long Island and over Cape Cod. I think Cape Cod was actually getting rain from it.
Why was Hurricane Aaron never mentioned that day and has never been mentioned in any of the work on 9/11 that I have read?
The more I talk about it, the more it's quieted down. It kind of makes you wonder if it's something that needed to be hushed.
Well, the reason I wanted to keep the volcano here, what does a hurricane have that is similar to a volcano?
Field effects.
Okay.
We see cars levitated during hurricanes and also tornadoes.
Right.
It's not necessarily the wind. Because there's a picture I have on my website of a car that's sitting on a fence, a wooden fence, where it had to go underneath an overhang to get there, and it's just teetering there, and the car doesn't have a scratch on it. It didn't tumble there. It floated there, and then gently was set down. And we've seen cars sitting on telephone poles and trees and so forth. It's
yes,
from levitation.
And so what you're saying is the same field effect that puts these cars on telephone lines can be the same effect that created a lot of the anomalies on 9/11.
It's one part of the ingredients.
Okay.
We know that storms have field effects ahead of them. People with arthritis talk about feeling a storm coming. And we have evidence on 9/11 that there were indeed field effects at JFK Airport, LaGuardia, and Newark Airport. All three airports reported thunder.
Okay.
Everyone remembers 9/11 being crystal clear.
That's right. Where would the thunder be? 9/11 was. Everybody says that. It was the most beautiful, fall day. Clear skies, clear blue skies. So how does thunder come out of clear blue skies?
The field effects extend beyond the cloud cover.
Okay.
So the hurricane didn't need to be over New York City. It only needed to be close enough so that its apron, the field effects, were over it.
All right. Okay. Are you saying that something like HAARP created and steered this hurricane?
I'm not saying how the hurricane got there, but it ended up there. And I know that hurricanes have field effects.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it was there just coincidentally. Because, why didn't they mention it on the 7 a.m., weather report?
That's exactly right. I mean, you are 100% right. I mean, if there's a hurricane, that the outer edges are actually over Manhattan and Staten Island, as you said, that should have been on the weather report.
Now, there was a cold front, high pressure coming from the west. It was going to probably keep it from coming ashore. Now, how that, you know, the timing was arranged is another issue. But they knew it was going to stop and go and not come inland at some point, but they didn't know exactly where, if it was just regular weather. How would you know exactly, down to the inch, you know, how far this hurricane was going to go towards land before it turned around? And how long is it going to stall out? If it stalls out too long, you know, JFK Airport is right there at sea level.
Right.
Storm surges are going to flood out JFK Airport, flood Long Island. You're going to have to worry about evacuating people.
And yet there was nothing.
Right.
Nobody said anything.
It's just, it was a little chance it'll come ashore, but just in case, some of you, you know, worry wards might want to, you know, start packing up and leaving. Like for Hurricane Bill, I know several people in New York City who rented cars to make sure they would have one, just in case.
Right, right.
And it was interesting, the similarities with Hurricane Bill.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, why weren't people given a warning that there's this Hurricane Aaron there, unless, this is what struck me, unless they were so sure, 100% sure, of what that hurricane was going to do?
Okay, I looked at some of the pictures of Hurricane Aaron, and there was something in the middle of Hurricane Aaron that did not look like the same eye of a hurricane that was in other hurricane pictures. Was I just seeing things, or what? Is there something different?
Yeah, it's weird. It's a pentagon shape. You know, usually inside of the eye is kind of a swirly pattern, but this is an abrupt pentagon shape. And then inside, it looks like those mazes of hedges. You know,
yeah.
So there's rows, kind of like streets, of clouds. You know, cloud, no cloud, cloud, no cloud. Just, you know, or like a worm wrapped back and forth. It's not like what you would see in a swirly hurricane eye.
I mean, my God, it is. I'm looking at it again. And folks, if you want to find it quickly, I have it in the reading room of rumormillnews.com. Just go over to rumormillnews.com, look in the reading room, and then scroll down until you see the thread of posts about Dr. Wood, and this one has hurricane in the title. And you can look and you can see exactly what we are seeing. There is definitely a pentagon, exactly like the pentagon that was attacked that day. That is so bizarre.
It's not a natural-looking pattern.
I
think it's also interesting that you can see evidence of other hurricane manipulation. For example, with Hurricane Ophelia, if you look at some of the microwave readings, which are from another instrument in orbit, you can see these anomalies in the rainfall pattern. They're not visible in the optical range. But, so it does present some evidence that these storms are able to be manipulated. And in fact, there's another, I think it's Hurricane Ivan, also have this unusual-looking eye as well.
Well,
so,
you know, I remember right after Katrina, Hurricane Rita came in and was just about to take out all of the oil refineries in Houston, which would have meant that we had no oil here in the United States. And somehow that hurricane got moved. You can see. You can actually see if you're tracking it. Hurricane Rita was moved so that it went over the same things that had been destroyed, not destroying new things.
If you look on the front page of my website, near the bottom, I've got a video you can download of Hurricane Rita.
Oh.
Where you can see those bars.
Uh-huh.
It's a QuickTime format. What's interesting is that Hurricane Rita is going in a straight line, making a beeline to Houston.
Right.
And then it makes, you know, it kind of swings up and then makes this right-hand turn, and then heads on a line going northwest. between those two straight lines, it's kind of a fillet, while it's transitioning onto the second line, it has these funny bars that they said were a transmission glitch. Transmission glitch from a whole bunch of different satellite images. And also the eye closed up.
Like the eye in Erin, which is off the shore from WTC.
Well, the eye closed up as the thing was being, you know, turned.
Mm-hmm.
And then after it finished turning, it opened back up again and then went in a straight line.
Wow.
So the transmission glitch apparently affected the hurricane's eye.
Folks, go to drjudywood.com, drjudywood.com, scroll down, because she's got the Murrah Building and Building 6 up there, or maybe it was Building 4. You got to see these pictures. And hello, everyone in sight. Hope you're having a great time, and we'll be right back here on the Micro Effect Radio Broadcast Network. You are listening to the Micro Effect. This is Raylan Allen. I'm talking with Dr. Judy Wood, and I'm talking with Andrew Johnson, and today is 9/11. It's the 8th anniversary of 9/11, and we are presenting to you another theory that doesn't get a lot of exposure in any media, even the alternative media. Now, Dr. Wood, we were talking about Hurricane Rita. Now, when I was, you know, living through that time, I found a picture of four orange things that were right next to Hurricane Rita.
Right. They appear right when it transitions while they are appearing. And then when they go away, the hurricane goes in a straight line.
In a straight line. The way I interpreted them, and tell me if I'm wrong, I thought they were four large Navy ships that had some sort of heat weaponry, and they just blasted heat at it and changed its course.
I don't know what it was, but rather than making assumptions, what I do is see the correlation with the hurricanes going in a straight line. Those anomalies appear, and the hurricane changes course.
Exactly.
Those anomalies disappear, and the hurricane goes in a straight line again.
Yeah.
And while it's transitioning, while those anomalies are present, there's no eye to the hurricane.
That's right.
So there's a correlation there.
Yeah.
To the hurricane changing course and this anomaly.
Well, it certainly is incredible. You know, I was married to a CIA operative, and he told me that, you know, back in the late 70s, early 80s, our country had put in space what is called Firefly platforms. And he said at that time they were just very powerful laser weapons that, you know, could literally take out things from space. And, you know, he made me believe that, you know, as of the late 90s, 2000, things have changed, that they've got all sorts of different type of weapons on those Firefly platforms. And so I'm just putting that out there, because that could be an explanation as to where this was coming from.
Well, it's not so important where it's located or where it's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
As it is what happened or what got done.
Right.
You know, folks will argue and say that there's not enough energy to destroy the towers. Well, are the towers still there?
That's right.
There was enough.
I think there's a number of things which are commonly mixed in, which we've tried to kind of steer around, really. And one of those is this idea of laser beams from space, which was used a lot when Dr. Wood had posted the first portions of her study in 2006. I think I remember seeing a cartoon on a blog somewhere with a flying saucer, you know, coming over the towers and a beam coming out of it. And it was a very sort of, it looks, it's a very comic book type of thing, you know, and then there was some there's also a remark mentioning Morgan Reynolds and Dr. Judy Wood in this. So I think what we have to do is to say a couple of things. First is that we look at the evidence and we draw conclusions, and that's sort of somewhat different to a theory. You know, you can have a theory about anything, but what you do is, if you want to find out what happened, you look at the evidence, and then as you build up that picture more and more and more, you can look and we'll see where that takes you. Now, in terms of, you know, what Dr. Wood's research has shown is she has started off with the data, gone through it, and come to certain conclusions, and those conclusions have been so powerful that it's allowed her to take some evidence to court, and we don't know where the weapon was, we don't know who pressed the buttons, but what we can say from the evidence is that we know who helped to cover up the study of the evidence, and some of those people worked for NIST, and they were then named in the court case as being people who should have taken the evidence that Dr. Wood has taken, and with the same sort of level of credentials as she has, they should have drawn certain conclusions, and they shouldn't, for example, have looked at the data and said, well, how can we adapt our computer models such that they show plane crashes explaining this evidence, when we know there is no possible way that gravity collapse and plane crashes can turn cars upside down selectively. So in other words, those same sets of pictures were available to the people who wrote the NIST reports. They just didn't want to find them, or they didn't look hard enough to find them. They just basically said, well, we know that the story that was in the media is true, so all we've got to do is select the evidence that we want to fit that story. And that's, of course, what everyone else is doing, and also that's what they're doing with this thermite. And if we just make mention that again, because I think it's worth reinforcing, the thermite doesn't turn things to dust, it melts things. We didn't see melting.
Right.
People like Stephen E. Jones claim that we did see melting.
That thing that's coming down the side of one of the buildings that looks like...
Correct.
Right. What was
that? And that was also how we got involved in this. I don't know what that was. Somebody has suggested, Steve Jones says it must be molten iron, but that he can't prove that. He can't prove that it was molten iron. What we've observed from looking at the Hutchison effect is you can indeed get jellified materials, but strangely these materials are not jellified with the use of heat. It's a cool process, and we've seen that in the samples. So what I would contend is that the molten metal was a deliberate misinformation exercise, and it's been very successful to hide this idea that the Hutchison effect technology can produce molten metal without heat, or with a very small amount of heat, such that you can reach in and touch the samples after they have turned to jelly. And this is what John Hutchison himself has got physical metal samples of. So it's not a theory. It's a proof of concept that's already available to anyone who wants to go to John and see, and ask him to hold one of his 500 pounds metal samples that he's got.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, we've got proof of concept.
Yeah, hold on to this, Andrew. Hold on to your thoughts. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Micro Effect Broadcast Network. Brought to you from Sykes, Idaho today, where a tea party will be going on today, and then a 9/12 movement party will be going on tomorrow. We're talking with Dr. Judy Wood, and we're talking with Andrew Johnson, and we're talking about a theory of how the trade towers went down that you've never heard before. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Micro Effect Radio Broadcast Network. This is Raylan Allen. I'm the publisher of Rumor Mill News, and I'm talking with Dr. Judy Wood. It's drjudywood.com, and we're also talking with Andrew Johnson. And Andrew, you've been using the word NIST over and over again, and for people who don't know what NIST is, it's National Institute of Standards and Technology. And if you just Google NIST and WTC, you will find that there is an entire page. I mean, my God, it's like an entire website totally devoted to their study. So that, I mean, this is like brainwashing. I mean, they've got so much proof there that, that they're proving to all of us that their theory is correct. And that, that must be what they were doing by the size of that site.
Well, it isn't
that's right.
Proving it. It's convincing you that they know the answer. Just trust us.
That's right. You know, I'm wondering if this is now a good time for you, Dr. Wood, to go in and talk about this. Was it a lawsuit against NIST that you filed?
No, it was a request for corrections.
Okay.
They had filed a fraudulent report. It had errors, so I pointed out their errors. For example, you know the tipping top of the South Tower?
Yes.
It doesn't keep on tipping as a solid unit.
That's correct, it doesn't.
And so it violates the laws of conservation of momentum.
Mm-hmm.
And I pointed that out to NIST. I also pointed out about the timing issue.
Mm-hmm.
That the North Tower went away in 8.5 seconds. The ground rumbled for 8.5 seconds.
Yes.
But it takes 9.5 seconds to drop a bowling ball off the roof and have it hit the ground. So,
oh, my gosh.
So it doesn't make sense. So I pointed these things out that it violated physics. And this replied to me, oh, no, our report does not violate physics because we didn't study the collapse.
Oh, my God. So the very things that they knew would be red flags, they just ignored them.
Yeah, they didn't analyze the collapse. They didn't analyze the collapse. So it didn't, their analysis didn't violate the laws of physics because they only studied the building up until before it came apart. And then they stopped their study. So the building was standing as long as it was standing. So it obeyed the laws of physics.
Hmm.
But they have a picture of, you know, the tipping top and so forth to make it appear that they analyzed it. And, you know, the contractors for it, you know, it's a breach of, or the violation of conflict of interest.
There have been so many conflicts of interest and people getting fired. When you were on Ambrose Lane's show, that was in New York, wasn't it?
Washington, D.C.
And he was on the XM channel, and he was fired.
Oh, we weren't on. We were 5 minutes from being on.
Oh.
He'd parked his car and walked into the studio and was ready to sit down 5 minutes to showtime, and they said, clear out your desk. You're gone.
Oh, my God.
And Andrew and I were supposed to be on his show, and we were waiting for the phone call that never came.
That never came. That is absolutely incredible.
The day that we were due to go on with that, what we were concerned about at that time was, and I think this is very interesting because I think it shows what can be achieved, really, once you have studied the evidence and you draw certain conclusions which are pretty unassailable, I would say, and that's that if you look at the destruction around the World Trade Center, which really wasn't shown that much on television, you saw the towers came down,
yeah,
and some of the dust and some of the people walking around and coughing and describing their terrible experiences, but you didn't really succeed in some of the things that Dr. Wood has already described, like the cars, you know, the toasted cars, the upside down cars, etc. But when you look at these pictures, it looks like a scene of nuclear desolation. And we were concerned, and I was concerned, because we had this Steve Jones character coming onto this Vancouver 9/11 truth event and saying, well, just imagine that there was going to be another false flag attack in America and in a city, and there was going to be a nuclear detonation of some kind, because this Dr. Bill Beagle character had claimed that there were 19 cities in these states pre-wired with nukes. Curiously, the Department of Homeland Security doesn't seem interested in taking in Dr. Bill Beagle for questioning over this strange claim that he has, but that's another issue. So
yeah.
We have Steve Jones saying that somewhere was going to be nuked. Bill Beagle was sort of tacitly agreeing with him, And then Michael Chertoff was also saying that Al-Qaeda had secretly got nukes from the Ukraine following the, you know, the destruction of the, or the collapse of the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
And they were going to bring them over and nuke an American city. And these two people were saying this around about the same time, which coincidentally was soon after the George Bush had passed an executive order to do with the continuity of government, in that they were going to transfer some of the roles from the Department of Homeland Security to another contingency agency of some kind. I can't remember the details.
If something happened to Congress, they could replace. He could appoint a whole new Congress.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
And so we had that. Those three things came within quite a short period of time, and so I can't remember what it was.
And Iran was going to get nuked too.
And who? What was going to get nuked?
Iran.
And of course, they're getting ready to do that right now.
Well, potentially, but so. Yeah. What we didn't come to the idea of is that what they were going to do is they were going to use the weapon again. In other words, the weapon that destroyed the World Trade Center, they were going to use it on another city or another building somewhere. And then they were going to claim it was an Al-Qaeda nuke. And that was basically what we were going to go on to the Ambrose Lane program and discuss why we'd sort of drawn that idea up. You know, we didn't have any inside information. We weren't, you know, saying it was definitely going to happen. We were just putting together a pattern of events, you know.
And what to look for.
And go ahead, Dr. Wood.
Yeah, what to look for. What this weapon looks like when it's been there. You know, go look at what happened at the World Trade Center and see if you recognize that and what is about to happen.
Well, you, on your page, Dr. Wood, you've got the World Trade Center Building 6, was it? Right next to the Murrah Building?
Right.
And they look identical.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this is it. So what we were going to, I just want to finish off that bit about the program. That was going to be what we were going to present, and that's when he was fired. So we took that as a signal that we must have been onto something there, because if that was such a dangerous thing for us to be talking about, or if it, you know, if it wasn't dangerous, then they would have allowed it for discussion. But somebody stepped in to stop that discussion ever going out on that radio station, which had quite a large audience.
Boy, and a large audience there in Washington, D.C., where, you know, some of our representatives may have actually paid attention to it. Dr. Wood, in this building, that you had, in the pictures that you've got right next to the Murrah Building, you have at the bottom, can you tell which is which? And you say, hint, one of them has a wheat checks at the bottom. What did you mean by wheat checks?
Wheat checks, that's what I call the prefab units of outer columns that the World Trade Center was built from. The towers are built of three columns wide and three stories tall, a whole lot of these prefab units that they assembled.
So it would be the one on the right that has the wheat checks at the bottom of them.
Yep.
So which building is which?
The wheat checks are at the bottom of the Building 6.
Oh, my God. And the other building is the Murrah Building.
Yes.
I would have absolutely sworn the other building was something at the WTC because of all of the dust down at the bottom.
Right. And see all those strings hanging out from each floor?
Yes.
Wiring,
right.
And notice that the ceiling tiles of the Murrah Building are, you know, the nice ceiling that you can see.
Yes.
It looks just fine, but the top is scallop-shaped, and there's vertical cuts. You know, a problem on the sidewalk would act in a radial fashion, not, you know, make cylindrical cuts like that from the top down.
And so no one, I mean, this was, what, 1995, no one would have even considered what you are saying, that it was done with a directed beam weapon. You know, no one ever considered that about the Murrah Building.
Right, they were talking about being nukes or something, but nukes would not be a cylindrical cutout like that.
Right.
Because it's, you know, straight down.
Oh, boy.
I mean, this is the other thing, which is, to me, is the only explanation which fits the data, because the lack of heat is a very simple thing to establish. I think both at the Ra building in that you've shown there, and at the World Trade Center, there was very much a lack of heat, and they had to start these molten metal stories because if you see that level of destruction without heat, you're looking at a different type of technology, because for that level of destruction to have occurred, both at the World Trade Center and the Alfred P. Murrah building, you're looking at a lot of heat with conventional explosives, be they, you know, RDX, C4, or nuclear explosives, and we don't see any other supporting evidence of nuclear devices being used. There's no bright flashes, no mushroom cloud, not in the sense of the traditional nuke anyway, no radiation effects on a large scale, no burning, no loud bangs. As the towers came down, it was virtually, certainly in the case of Building 7, it was virtually silent, and that's according to this same report, that the destruction of Building 7 was almost silent, and that's in their own Building 7 report. So how can that happen without a building didn't just fall down in silence? I mean, it just cannot happen. So
it
you're looking
like
at another part of technology.
What did you say, Dr. Wood?
It should be like raining dump trucks.
Yeah, you're right. You know, I did have a caller call in and wanted to know if your theory would explain why so few bodies were found.
I don't know about it being a theory again, it's an explanation. I believe that the only DNA identified was from, quote, jumpers, and I don't believe they necessarily jumped, and the firefighters at the bottom.
Now, you are saying you don't believe that they necessarily jumped. What do you mean by that?
That's, I guess, a slightly different issue, but they were, quote, jumpers, you know, bodies that came out of the building and landed
yes.
on the pavement. There's enough of those to account for all of the DNA that has been identified.
So you're saying that the rest of the people who were in there were just completely atomized?
Correct. With, I believe they were, except for maybe some people right at the very bottom, the firefighters at the very bottom.
Right.
But, you know, the other 100 stories, for sure. For example, where are the toilets? You should have 2,000 toilets or so there. There's not a single recognized portion of a toilet.
Yeah, you would think that a toilet would survive, wouldn't you?
Well, you always see that left of something.
Yeah. Wow.
But the people were coming apart before they hit the street on the way down.
What do you mean they were coming apart before they hit the street?
Witnesses had people turning into, said the guy turned into a blob of red, or a cloud of red. He was no longer a person. As he was falling down.
Did you find any photographs of that?
I have photographs of not... Well, yeah, I've got some photographs of also the jumpers coming down.
Uh-huh.
And I was trying to explain to myself how this jumper could be 100 feet from the building. And he's halfway down the building. If he started at the very top and jumped out with all his might at world record standing broad jump speed...
Mm-hmm.
He might be 100 feet from the building halfway down. But he shouldn't be 200 feet. So how do you explain bodies landing 300 or 400 feet from the building, or 500 feet?
The media did not cover the jumpers, and they told us why they weren't going to cover the jumpers, because they did not want the relatives of the jumpers, you know, to go through that emotional pain. And so I've never seen what you're describing, the ones that landed more than 500 feet away. But you've got those photographs on your...
Some, yeah. Yeah. Not on my website, because it's sensitive, but it'll you'll see it sometime.
Okay.
There's also some other, you know, weird things associated with that as well. Why did people come apart on the pavement? People who jump out of airplanes you know, and the parachute doesn't open, they usually die, but there's some that have survived. So there's a chance of survival. They don't get busted up in so many pieces, you know, a finger here, a toe there, and so forth. And we all know hitting a deer going at 80 miles an hour, the deer is busted up, but it's still together.
Right.
You don't have a hoof here, a tail over there, you know, pieces. The deer is still in one piece.
Right.
So what took the people apart?
Yeah.
I think the problem, you know, is that what we're talking about at this very moment is horrific, really horrific, and that's the same for the whole event, 9/11. It's a horrific event. So that in of itself discourages people very much from actually going to look at the evidence, to look at the data and reevaluate what happened. And that's perhaps one of the biggest obstacles to getting people to look, because, you know, the information is available. It hasn't all been taken away. Some people like Steve Jones have said, oh, the NIST has kept all their videos secret, so don't, you know, we've asked them. That isn't simply not true.
There are plenty of
videos available to look at so that you can look at the evidence yourself. So the problem is that people don't look at the evidence, and that by them not looking at the evidence, that has allowed all these sort of bogus stories and muddle-ups to be perpetrated on them. You know, so we've got these fake groups like Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth and Scholars for 9/11 Truth, which I was essentially roped into, not knowing what I was getting into.
Yeah.
And when I started to look at the evidence, as Dr. Wood has been doing, and she's been doing that more than any other person, that's when I started to really understand what actually happened. And, you know, then I began to move forward again.
Well, you know, I just put in Google, you know, WTC and jumpers, and went to Google and searched for images. And one of the first ones that comes up is of a man laying on his back, and his leg appears to have been drained of everything. And everything that was in the one leg is laying, you know, the muscle, the flesh, the blood.
Oh, this might be a fake picture.
Oh, it may be one of the fake ones?
Yeah, there's some fake ones there.
Oh, okay. So I'll just assume that's a fake one then until I really see your real ones. We do have a caller on the line who has a question. We've got Doug from Florida who wants to get in here with us. Come on, Doug. What's your question?
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Oh, great. Well, the first question, I had two, actually. The first one is, have you all actually been in John Hutchinson's lab and seen the effect that he is saying is taking place?
I have.
Really? That's interesting. I have a very intense interest in energy and, you know, energy from the vacuum type stuff, and I've been looking for proof, you know, that that hasn't been disproved. And you were talking about hurricanes a little bit earlier. Hurricane Rita, and living in Florida, I went through four hurricanes in 2004, I think it was, when Jeannie and Francis entered Florida down near Fort Pierce within a mile of each other and came up and took almost the exact same track, running for about 36 hours, and Jeannie did a little circle out there in the Atlantic, and that's the first time I gave consideration to hurricanes being directed, but I'm still looking for proof that you kind of disturbed me when you said it's not important where the energy or things are coming from. It's that the effects actually took place. But I think it's extremely important to find out where the effects are, or what's actually generating, how they're controlling.
Okay, what I am saying is it doesn't depend on where the thing is as to whether or not it happened. It's like the argument saying there wasn't enough energy to destroy the towers. Well, the towers aren't there, so obviously there was enough. And let's look at just the physical evidence to be convinced of things rather than needing to speculate on who pushed the button and, you know, where they pushed the button from. But the first step is understanding what happened at the scene. We see what happened, molecules come apart and so forth. And looking at the physical evidence and seeing how it relates. Then after you understand what happened, then you go to how it happened, you know, where it came from, and who, and then only after that you go to who done it.
Are you not? Are you? Do you don't think you're at that point at this time?
No, I have to find now what happened. I haven't gotten to exactly how it happened. You know what the serial numbers are and so forth.
Well, I'm looking for, you know, the concept, because right now the way I see hurricane manipulation and what happened to towers or whatever, you know, I look for the natural phenomena that we know of, or the directed phenomena, however, the normal things we expect, and these other things are outside the box, obviously. I'm totally open to that, but I can't find any proof anywhere yet of these types of phenomena.
Well, if you look around at what hurricanes and tornadoes do, last spring it was pretty funny that there was a bunch of tornadoes in the Midwest, and there's a guy who saw cars. He says, "I swear I saw cars floating." You know, he was standing there. He saw cars floating past him down the street.
Is this somebody that you talked to?
No, this guy was quoted in all sorts. Google the quote. "I swear I saw cars floating."
Okay.
And you'll find lots of references to it.
Well, I just like to know, you know, because some people like to perpetrate hoaxes and you know, try to make themselves look good. And hearsay is you know, not very defensible.
Well, we
see. What about
Let Andrew go first, and
okay.
Dr. Wood. Go ahead, Andrew.
What I would say in response to that, proving something like weather manipulation will be extremely difficult because the current paradigm of people, you know, in academia, for example, it's just not possible to change the weather in any other than through cloud seeding. That is the only technology that is you know, discussed in academic papers that could be used to change the weather. So if you want to gather data to prove hurricane manipulation, you're going to have to get it accepted by somebody, some expert, some meteorologist. And all the meteorologists either work for universities or government institutions, just about. So are they going to lay their career on the line and say, "Oh, yes, you're right, you know, yeah, I can see that this storm was manipulated"? Because once that is admitted by somebody in public, then that question has to be answered, which is the one that you asked, which is who's doing it, where is the technology, how is it done?
Well, more
than we haven't got answers to those questions, officialdom will not acknowledge that the weather is being modified. But if you go and look at the data from 9/11, which is on Dr. Wood's website, on the ARINT series, and you work through that, I think you will be able to add to any data that you've already got that you may have collected yourself to build up your own personal case for when you want to argue it out with somebody who doesn't believe you. That's about all I would say in response to your question.
Well, the physics that we know today, and I'm not a physicist, and I don't understand physics totally, but as the degree that I do...
And hold on, Doug. We've got to go to break. I'll keep you on over the break. And a great big hello to everyone out there at Skype. You're listening to the Micro Effect Radio Broadcast Network. We're talking with Dr. Judy Wood and Andrew Johnson, and we're talking about what happened today, 8 years ago. We'll be back. And you are listening to the Micro Effect Radio Network. This is Raylan Allen. I'm talking to Dr. Judy Wood. DrJudyWood.com is her website. And Dr. Wood has a PhD in materials engineering science from the Department of Engineering and Science and Mechanics at the University of Blacksburg, Virginia.
Virginia Tech.
Yeah, it's known as Virginia Tech. Doug, you had a question. I mean, you were laying out your thoughts before we went to break. Do you want to continue?
Well, I think I'm just going to get one more question in, and then I'll get off the line. But because some of these things have been gnawing at me for a long time, as far as another aspect of this on weather control, there's a Thomas Bearden, which you probably heard of, who has postulated or laid out that he believes there's something called scalar weapons, which in my studies of physics seems like that should not even exist, and yet he insists that it has been used to manipulate the weather. Do you have any ideas about whether this is truthfulness or not?
Well, I go back 100 years to old technology of Nikola Tesla. That's what John Hutchison uses. I'm not saying what happened in New York City to the WTC was the Hutchinson effect, but it involved the same physics, the same phenomena that occurred. So where does that come from? It's been around 100 years, but it's been kept quiet.
Yeah. Have you replicated yourself at all?
I've not done that. No, but there's other things that are replicated. You can test yourself if you're observant. During a thunderstorm or during hurricanes.
Okay.
People feel differently. Why do they feel differently?
Oh, you're absolutely right. It's almost like something affects the entire emotional state.
Right.
Well, see, I don't get that, and I live in probably the thunder, the lightning capital of the world here in Central Florida, and I don't really feel any different during thunderstorms. So I can't associate with that.
Okay. Yeah, some people are more sensitive than others to that, but if you look at different weird things that happen with tornadoes and hurricanes, and then see what they have in common. They go round and round and round with kind of a disc on top, a big flat plate on top,
mm-hmm.
with a tall column. Now consider what a Tesla coil looks like. The wires go round and round and round with a big, toroid on top.
And you have a picture of that somewhere on your website, don't you?
Yeah, I think it's on the JJ4 page.
Okay.
But if you go for the front page, you can see the link to follow.
Well, your website is brand new to me, and I plan on reviewing it, because I've never ran across it, and I appreciate you all the time very much.
And your website, I don't know if you did it yourself, Dr. Wood, but it is so incredibly...
It's kind of bursting at the seams. It needs better organization, but it's just grown and grown. But the best page for people to go look at for just a once-over is the Cliff Notes page, or drjudywood.com/WTC. That gives a sampling of a whole lot of different categories of evidence.
Is that WTC.htm or HTML?
No, nothing after it.
Nothing after it, huh? Okay.
Yeah,
I'm just pulling it up right now. There it is, the Cliff Notes page. So it's drjudywood.com/WTC. Incredible. You've got that one picture of the tower, the one that is the top of that page and on the right-hand side, and it looks exactly like a volcano.
Yeah, a bubbler.
Why hasn't anybody tried to explain that to us? It can't be explained away, can it?
I don't think so. That's one of the things I submitted to NIST, saying, this does not look like a collapse to me. Please explain.
Right.
And the picture on the left-hand side needs an explanation, too.
Well, it's pretty strange. How in the world could that shape of a cloud come out of the collapse of the WTC?
And the building is intact below that level, and it's completely gone above that level. Because remember that tipping top tipped over and then disintegrated?
Yes, I do.
So what's pushing the building down?
I don't know. What is? Can you tell us?
There's no force pushing the building down.
So that...
It is not a collapse.
The next possible thought would be, if something's pushing it down and there's no force, it has to be this field theory that you've been...
Now, this is the material. Instead of the molecules being attracted to each other, they're suddenly repelling each other.
Okay.
It's like they reversed the sign.
Well, one of the analogies which I drew when we were looking at this is that if you've got a structure of dominoes set up in one of these domino toppling arrangements,
mm-hmm.
if for example you were some unusual type of perception which prevented you from seeing that all these dominoes were actually in a long line, and that what you were doing is you needed to take down this structure of dominoes. So what you did is you flick one away, you flick another one, 10 rows away, and you flick it in a horizontal direction away from the you know, because you couldn't see the structure that these are all arranged in rows. So you carry on doing this for a bit, and you're spending quite a bit of effort individually knocking over these dominoes. But then at some certain point, somebody either tells you or you find information which tells you that all these dominoes are actually arranged in a line, and you just have to tap the first one in the right direction, in other words, towards the next one, and then the whole lot will go down. So instead of expending a lot of energy flicking down individual dominoes, all you're doing is tapping the first one very, very lightly, and all the rest go down. Now, the analogy that I can't remember if I drew it originally or whether Dr. Wood did, but if somebody has worked out with a particular type of material, such as steel, that they've worked out that the steel is actually arranged from one point of view as a set of dominoes, then if they've worked out where to tap the structure, and I don't mean physically tap it with a pen, but I really mean tweak it with energy, or make it resonate with energy in the way that the Tacoma Narrows Bridge resonated with the wind gusts and destroyed itself. That's the analogy that Dr. Wood have used in one of her earlier presentations, in that you can get what's called a resonance effect, and a structure will destroy itself because of the resonance.
That is perfect with a question I have from a reader who says, could the very design of the WTC Twin Towers have created its own magnetic field effect, and the impact of the jets created a tuning fork effect upon the towers?
Let's forget about airplanes. Airplanes didn't destroy the buildings.
Okay.
It wasn't a mechanical force. It was a different kind of force.
What is this resonance that you're talking about, Andrew?
Well, it's basically, for example, you know that microwave ovens, how they work,
mm-hmm.
in that if you put cold water inside a microwave oven, you switch it on, and the water gets heated up. But there's no obvious, you can't see anything in the oven. All you can see is a little light which comes on. You can't see a beam of energy going from the thing at the back to the water. You can touch the glass plate underneath, and the glass plate is cold.
Well,
yes,
you put a paper towel under it.
Say that again, Dr.
So what?
You put a paper towel under it, and the paper towel doesn't get cooked.
That's
yes.
Right.
So what's happening is the microwave energy is essentially tuned to the resonant frequency of the water molecule, and the water molecule, when the microwave energy impacts on it, resonates and vibrates, and its heat is actually a vibration of the molecule. That's what heat is when you get down to the level of molecules. It's a... this is what's called Brownian motion. And so if somebody has worked out a more sophisticated version of using microwave technology on other materials, I'm not saying it was being with microwave oven, it's more complicated than that, but it's that type of resonance principle where you're disrupting or exciting a material, but instead of just heating it, You're making the material come apart at a molecular or an atomic level, and that's what molecular dissociation is. Dissociation means, you know, one part moving away from another, like when you dissociate yourself from another group, you move away from it. So molecular dissociation is two very small molecules of material deciding to go separate ways, and then the material comes apart. And in normal physics, with a conventional sort of Einsteinian physics, that just doesn't happen. You don't just get molecular dissociation by beaming something with energy. But it appears from what John Hutchinson has done that you can actually create this effect if you do it in the correct way. And we know that it can be done because he's got 500 pounds of metal samples, which shows that he's done it.
Yeah, I've seen his videos. They're just truly extraordinary. Mark from Nevada is online. What's your question, Mark?
Hi, I'd like to, I'm sorry, I would like to thank Dr. Judy Wood and Andrew for their tenacity and all they've done to bring about this type of information to the world.
Well, thank you very much.
I have to say the one thing that convinced me the most about Dr. Wood's conclusions is the video evidence of the core columns being literally dissolved into dust in midair. She's got a sequence of that on her webpage.
There's also, at the top of that WTC page, there's some videos showing what I call the wheat checks flying through the air towards the intersection of DC and West Street. And you see them dissolving, kind of melting like ice cream as they come down. And right afterwards, the people come out of their hiding places and walk into that intersection, and there's no debris on the ground except paper.
There's also a new video on the Internet, well, about 6 months old, that also shows from a different angle this same effect.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, can you discuss more about your Kwai Chan cases and your lawsuits against the government and their current status and any resistance you've received?
Well, it's still ongoing. We haven't decided what to do for the next stage. But it's... So I'm not really free to talk about it.
Okay.
About the exact details. But it one thing I will say is none of the defendants have denied the allegations.
Oh, isn't that amazing?
And
I think that's one of the most interesting things, that there's been no denials to your cases. They're just stonewalling.
Yeah, they're trying to find out, well, it's his fault. It's that guy over there's fault. Don't point the finger at me. Point the finger at him over there. He did it.
Wow.
What I would recommend people doing, if they're interested in that, and if the caller hasn't done so already, if you read the original ruling on the case, which was by Judge George Daniels, and that was given, I think, just over a year ago, it's June 2008, June 29th, I think, around that time. You can read his ruling, I think it's, I don't know, about 10 or 11 pages long. And in that document, he mentions the moon landings and the assassination of JFK in terms of them being ridiculous conspiracy theories or something like that. I can't remember the exact words that he used. So that's in a document which is in the court system. It's not some other top secret forum posting. This is in a court document that the judge is feeling the need to bring in the moon landing hoax, theory, or whatever you want to call it, and the assassination of JFK. So that, to me, was very telling in that if they couldn't attack the data, they had to attack the credibility of the messenger or the general nature of, you know, the idea that it was drawing you towards. So, again, I think that's very telling in terms of what the result of the court case ruling was initially.
One thing I would like to point out is this is not a conspiracy theory. This is, conspiracy involves whodunit. I'm not addressing whodunit. I'm addressing what got done and the fact that those who were hired by our taxpayer money to investigate what was done covered it up.
Well, that's the significant thing about your effort is that it addresses the evidence and not just, any theories that come about. It's actually taking the evidence and stepping it piece by piece, just like in a criminal case. So, you know, anything beyond that is just theory.
Right.
It's a forensic investigation of sorts.
Yes. And it's very clear once you look at the evidence as to what happened.
Right. I agree. Thank you very much. Keep up the great work.
Thank you so very
much. Thank you very much for calling.
I've got a couple of comments that readers have sent in. And first is the question. If there was a threat of Hurricane Aaron to the New York City area, did the WCT prevent tourists from going to the top observation decks that day or the day before the event?
It's not about a gust of wind. That wasn't, you know, that comes later if the hurricane comes on shore. But if a hurricane stalls out just offshore, you have storm surges and flooding.
But there'd be no wind, so there would have been no reason to shut down anything.
Not yet. The wind would pick up, and then you'd shut stuff down. But
okay. But
by then, you've been flooded out.
Okay. And one of our more informed readers sent in Russia has had scalar weaponry for quite some time now.
Well, if I may mention that, this is something that Tom Bearden talked about, and I think one of the other messages mentioned Tom Bearden.
Yes.
He's been made aware of this research.
Hold on, Andrew. We've got that first break coming. You're listening to the Micro Effect Radio Broadcast Network. I'm talking with Dr. Judy Wood, and of course we're talking about what happened on 9/11, and Andrew was just about to talk about Tom Bearden and scalar weapons, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. This is the Micro Effect Radio Broadcast Network. And we've got Dr. Judy Wood and Andrew Johnson on the line. And Andrew, you were just about to talk about Tom Bearden and scalar waves and somehow try to tie this into what we're talking about today. Andrew,
I know that he's been made aware of this research.
Uh-huh.
And because I know one or two people have written to him. I know that he is quite old now, and I believe his health may not be so good. But it's very curious that he's repeatedly, over the years, said that the Russians have got this scalar weapons technology. But as I think I said on the last broadcast, I think this is a global group that's got this technology, and they don't have any loyalty to any particular country.
I agree with that.
And so I think to point the finger at the Russians doesn't, to me, make a lot of sense. I think also what's worth people, if they're interested in Tom Bearden's knowledge on this, if you go and have a look around Dr. Wood's website at first and spend a few hours looking at that, and then if you can go onto my YouTube channel, which is YouTube 8/ADJUK, and search for a Tom Bearden video, you'll find a clip from a 1985 documentary, 1985 presentation that he did at McDonnell Douglas, talking about these so-called scalar weapons. And the description that he gives in this video, which is about 7 minutes long, is eerily similar to what seems to have happened at the World Trade Center, just from my perspective, having considered.
Andrew, if you can send me that link over, I'll post that link in the thread. And we now have the owner of the Micro Effect on the line with us. So welcome, Mr. Joe McNeil.
How are we doing, Ray?
Well, I think we're doing pretty good. How are we sounding out there in the middle of Stites?
Sounding pretty good. I've heard you tell the people at Stites hello a few times.
Yes.
Can you hear the music in the background?
Yes, we can hear the music. What's going on there?
Well, we're having a tea party. This is where everybody comes and talks about the things that are going on. I'm passing out flyers. I got the guy in charge here right in front of me. I'll let you talk to him for a few minutes. How's that?
Okay, that sounds good.
Okay, this is Rawhide.
Hey, Rawhide, you're on the air worldwide.
Hello, guys.
Hi.
Hi.
So, Rawhide, what did you decide to do there in Stites today and tomorrow?
Well, what we're doing is we're having a tea party. Today is in memory of September 11th, and gratitude for all the people that helped, and also in memory of the ones that we lost, and we're also gathered together because this is a little town in Idaho, and we have a big mouth, and we want everybody to hear us because it's very important that the country knows that, you know, it's not just the big cities, it's not the East or Chicago or New York, it's also us small people who down here who are the backbone of this country. You know, we're still hunters and fishermen farmers and ranchers, and we got something to say about what's going on. And everyone here, well, we believe in our Constitution and the right to bear arms and the right to stand up for our First Amendment and say what we need to say. And that's what we're doing today and tomorrow.
And tomorrow.
Yep, so, we're doing 2 days.
As I said, Idaho isn't that big. It's not like California or Texas. Everybody in Idaho ought to be able to get down there to Stites tomorrow.
Well, I hope they do, because tomorrow, you know, we've had a lot of good speakers today, a lot of them. And we've filled every chair we've had, and we'd like to see this whole park filled tomorrow. We've got families coming in, and we have some good music, and we've got some good lyrics. But we've also got a lot of people that's got a lot of things to say.
Well, that sounds pretty darn good. I hope our listening audience in the area will cancel their plans for tomorrow, get in their cars, and go to Stites.
I hope so, too.
Yeah, I wish I were close enough to come.
I wish you were, too.
Well, thanks so much for coming on and giving us an update.
Okay, and God bless everybody in this country.
Thank you. We sure do need it. And in England, too, because, Andrew, England needs to be blessed also.
All right, we're back, Ray.
Okay, Joe.
That's the guy in charge of what's going on here.
Yeah. Anything more you wanted to say?
No, I think you're doing a great job today with Dr. Windsor covering 911. I've heard some really interesting stuff there.
Yeah, well...
That I hadn't even considered.
You know, she is one of these researchers on 9/11 that everybody else says, don't pay any attention to her.
Yeah.
Don't get the evidence.
Yeah. And it's like when all of the other major researchers don't want me to pay any attention to someone, that's the first person I go to and find out who they are.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a good thing to do, I've always found, because sometimes that lone voice in the wilderness actually knows what's going on.
That's right.
Well, I'll let you get back to your show, Ray. I just thought we'd check in here and let you know we can hear you out here.
Oh, fantastic.
In Idaho.
You know, Dr. Woods, I still want to get back to the volcano because I just can't get over how much the pictures of 9/11 look like the volcano beginning to come up out of, you know, the cone. And what did that? I mean, what is similar to this picture on 9/11 and to what a volcano is doing?
Molecules are coming apart.
And that's the same thing in a volcano.
Yeah, as far as I can tell, that's, you know, and I believe my own eyes. I went and looked at volcanoes and came to my own conclusion.
Okay. You know, I remember when Mount St. Helens
mm-hmm.
erupted. I'm in California, but we were covered with dust. And that dust was gray dust.
I make you a bet
it looked a lot like the dust at the WTC.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it looked just like it. I worked at Boeing that summer.
Oh, okay.
Washington?
Yes.
And at lunchtime, went out and got the stuff off the leaves. It was, you know, like quarter-inch thick coating of dust on the leaves. Put it in a sandwich baggie, went inside, got a magnet, and ran it over the outside of the sandwich baggie.
Right.
And a whole lot of magnetic particles that came up to the magnet.
Now, I'll make
I don't know if it was just iron or if there's other things in there.
Now, were you able to get any of the dust from the WTC?
No, I haven't. But I haven't needed to.
And what's the reason that you haven't needed to? You can prove it?
Yeah, I understand enough what's going on from the other evidence I collected. And any dust that I did get from the WTC, there's a chain of custody issue, and how is it cared for, and what's it contaminated with.
Exactly. I understand. And we're right at the bottom of the hour now. You're listening to the Micro Effect Radio Broadcast Network. We're talking with Dr. Judy Wood, Andrew Johnson, and we will be right back for the last half hour of this show. And welcome back. This is the Micro Effect Radio Broadcast Network. We are worldwide on the Internet. We're America and Canada on satellites. We're carried on various AM and FM radio stations across the country. And the entire rural area of America is covered by our micro stations. We're talking with Dr. Judy Wood and Andrew Johnson. And Dr. Wood, you've got a page of close-up views of selected beams at Ground Zero. And on one of them, this is the one where the... what is it? There's an air tank standing vertically. Do you know the picture I'm talking about? Dr. Wood, have I lost you? It's got giant machinery standing on top of this beam. There's an air tank next to it, and then there's this strange burn in one of the iron girders. What I mean, it is so strange.
I'm not sure which picture you're talking about.
Oh, you don't know? Okay, it's on. It's the picture. It's the page that is the close-up views of selected beams at Ground Zero.
Okay, that one. That's from like 4 years ago.
Okay, I believe I can understand how you can forget, but there's just such strange markings on these fields.
Oh, those were torch cut beams.
Okay.
That was the first beams I actually looked at. I went through each picture just. That was an email I was typing to somebody, and actually that is why I took out the website initially, was to put the captions with the pictures.
Okay.
For my friend.
But one of the things that you say is you're amazed at how straight the ends of the beams are.
That's because they were made that way.
Okay.
I wasn't aware of that until then. That was just what I had noticed. No, but one thing that hasn't been answered since then is, my, how clean it is.
The
cleanest construction site I've ever seen, clean enough to eat off of.
That is true. But also, you know, I have never seen, the photos like this of the beams. I thought nothing that large survived.
Oh, some of the ones at the very bottom. Stairwell B survived, and 14 people in Stairwell B survived and walked out.
Oh, isn't that extraordinary? What explains that in your theory of, directed energy? What explains that certain areas weren't touched?
Again, I don't go for theories. I go for observations.
Okay.
But it, that caller that talked about those core columns that were left standing and then wilted and poofed away into dust,
mm-hmm.
right before our eyes, I believe that was the top of that section. That there was a small vertical zone of the building that whatever happened missed for whatever reason. And it didn't get fully affected.
Huh.
And the bottom, few stories is where the people survived. And they thought they would have 110 stories on top of them.
Mm-hmm.
And when the dust cleared, they looked up and saw blue sky. And they walked out onto what one of them described as an empty football field.
Oh, my gosh. And again, I've never heard anything like that. We've got a comment from one of our listeners. And he writes, it was reported by some of the New York Fire Department firefighters that the intense heat in the WC Twin Tower offices was like watching the window of a convection microwave oven. They claimed that they were helpless in rescuing trapped people in these areas of the building and were being micro-cooked beyond the normal carbonation process. Do you know anything about that?
As for heat or the sensation of heat, that's two different things.
Well, it almost looks like the firefighter, the way he says it here, it almost looks like the firefighters were looking at people who were literally being micro-cooked in front of their eyes. And
well,
I'll have to...
integrated or something happening to them. There are people who thought that, people were trying to explain what they were experiencing, and it didn't fit any of their experience of life.
Right.
And so they're trying to fit it into what their known, diagram for life is. And things weren't working, and so they're trying to interpret things. One of the most interesting things is the discussion about the steel-toed boots that melted.
The what that melted?
Steel-toed boots.
Oh, yes, I remember that.
But the feet never got cooked. If your oven was melting on the outside, don't you think the turkey inside would be cooked?
I would think so, yes.
But there's no reports of burned feet.
So in other words, the steel toes boots melted, but the feet weren't burned.
Correct. Well, whatever happened, maybe the steel disintegrated and they interpreted that as melted.
Yeah.
Could be that it was glowing.
One of the other things is this molten metal. In fact, two points in sort of which have been used similarly. The molten metal issue, and we've got a video testimony of the firefighters saying, you know, we saw these rivers of running molten metal like at a foundry.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we know that we've seen false information injected at regular intervals into the 9/11 record. But that information may be false or it may be genuine. And if it is genuine, what they may have witnessed is molten metal, which wasn't hot. Because with the John Hutchinson experiments, he's you know, created fires, spontaneous fires, where there's been no melting and no apparent high heat.
Yeah, it's cooler than the ambient temperature.
Yeah. So what these firefighters may have witnessed, and I was thinking back to the example that you were mentioning there, which maybe wasn't quite the same thing, but I thought you were going to say that they could see these glowing fires, you know, inside this area where they couldn't get to people. And it could be that those were indeed glowing fires, but they weren't hot, not in the sense of traditional heat. There may have been energy involved in creating those fires, but they may have been a different type of fire. I know that's very hard for us to kind of talk about, because it's not something, as Dr. Wood just said, we experience in everyday life. And the other point I just wanted to put in at this time was about the dust, and we talked about the dust, and, you know, a lot of people have said, oh, well, you haven't got any dust, so, you know, you haven't got any physical evidence, so, you know, you haven't got anything to go on. Whereas, of course, Dr. Stephen Jones says that he's got this dust sample, he's got at least two dust samples now, apparently. One was collected through a person called Janet McKinley with no chain of custody established. It appeared 5 years after the event,
right.
And on and on. But the thing with Dr. Jones is he also submitted an RFC to NIST, as Dr. Wood did,
mm-hmm.
but in his RFC and the appeal, he did not mention his thermite research at all, and he did not mention molten metal. But even though Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth and Stephen Jones and several other groups repeatedly discussed this molten metal and repeatedly discussed thermite in several forms, they didn't put it in the document which went through to NIST as a legal challenge, essentially, or the basis for a legal challenge. So if they're so confident to talk about this evidence in public and they're sure that it's right and they're sure they've got this forensic dust bag of evidence, why did they not have the confidence to put that research and those conclusions in the document they submitted to NIST? And that, to me, is the smoking gun of why they really can't be telling the truth. Because if they were, they would have put it in that document, as Dr. Wood did.
So what you are saying is he omitted things that would, would irritate NIST or something?
If it's fraudulent and he knows it's fraudulent, he could be charged with defrauding the government.
Mm.
Yeah.
Isn't that an amazing thing?
Now, you don't have to take my word for it, because you can go onto his website, you can search for the Jones RFC NIST or something like that. I haven't got the exact link to hand. And you can load that as a PDF file, you can download it, you can search for the word thermite, you can search for the word molten, and you'll get no results. It's as simple as that.
Okay.
So you don't have to take my word for it, that I'm just trying to, you know, people say, oh, you're trying to attack this person. You know, no, I'm not trying to attack him. I'm trying to illustrate what he's actually said. That's all I'm doing.
Okay. And we do have another caller on the line. Can you go ahead?
Yes, hello, Raylan.
Yes, you're going to have to speak up a little bit. We can barely
hear
you.
Hi, Raylan. This is Pam in New York City.
Hi, Pam.
I had a question, and it's actually kind of mundane, which is your on-air email address, which I couldn't find on the site.
Oh, it's Radio Question. Radio Question at mindspring.com.
At Mindspring. But I did have one other thing to say, and that's, I don't know if you're familiar with the film The Panama Deception.
And again,
and
your voice is so low, we can barely hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Let me speak up. I have a very faint voice.
Okay.
The Panama Deception, it's a film that looks into the Panama invasion. that took place, I think, during the first Bush administration.
Yeah,
and in
know.
It, they talk about weapons that people don't know, you know, what happened. They talk about people being vaporized on the ground and whole neighborhoods disappearing and no evidence of fire. Very similar to what your guests are talking about. And I just wondered if they had looked into that situation and if there was any correlation in their minds.
Is it a book or is it a video?
It's a film. It's a film that's shown, you know, not certainly not on TCM, but it's
yeah.
around, it's shown a number of times in New York City.
Interesting.
That is very interesting.
It's worth looking at that, because there's lots of different accounts in it. I'm sorry.
It's a documentary. I'm just looking it up right now. I'll make
yeah,
it better
it's a documentary.
If we Googled it. Yes, it's on YouTube.
Oh, good. All right, I'll hang up now. I just want to congratulate the two guests on doing such good work. And you
thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
And that was a really good hint, you know?
Mm. That's interesting. Yeah, I hadn't heard of that before, but that's interesting that she was able to correlate those.
Yeah, it was directed by Barbara Trent, and I swear to God I've worked with her on something or other before. I'll have to follow that up. We've got about 12 minutes left. What's the most important thing that we have not touched on?
Well, the biggest thing I can think of is stress is we all need to think for ourselves.
Right.
That's how we, not doing so is how we got into this position.
Yes.
And the only way out is for each of us to think for ourselves and come to our own conclusions. I don't want anyone to just take my word for it, believe me. I want them to look at the evidence and to understand it for themselves. So that's why I present the evidence for them.
Well, that is truly an excellent idea. And my God, to do that, you know, our children have been conditioned, you know, all through school, not to think for yourself, but just to accept the stuff that comes in. I'm a former teacher, and
mm-hmm.
we don't turn out thinking people anymore.
Correct.
And so how do we go to the younger generation and say, first you've got to learn to think, and then you've got to look at all of the evidence. And, you know, what they would rather do is have somebody put it into a video, and then they can watch it.
And that, again, is somebody giving them their opinion.
That's correct. That's absolutely correct. So if we've got any younger members of the audience out there, how do we teach, what, not a whole generation, almost two generations?
Read Mark Twain.
Oh, but he's banned in the schools here in California.
Really?
Yes. And,
that
and
is why.
Well, if Huck Finn were alive, he'd be put on Ritalin today. I think it's because Mark Twain calls one of the blacks a nigger or a Negro. And, of course, that's what they were called at the time that, you know,
there's,
he would
there's a particular quote I like of Mark Twain. It says, whenever you find yourself on the side of the majority, it's time to pause and reflect.
Oh, my God, that is a wonderful quote. I think we need to make it up into T-shirts and bumper stickers for this time in our history right now.
Yeah, the majority does not establish, truth.
No.
Truth is not a popularity contest.
And the other
that's
thing
one thing
have...
I've had to explain.
Yeah, go ahead, Andrew.
Yeah, that's one thing I've had to sort of point out to people here in the UK, because I got involved with UK Truth, 9/11 Truth Groups, you know, quite heavily starting in 2005. And there is a group in London, which I got to know a few members of that. But then when I started to get involved with this research, they actually became quite openly hostile. And, this is a part of the subject I think we touched on when I was last on, but I think it's worth mentioning it again now, in that, the hostility I experienced didn't really make any sense when, for example, the people were asking for a new investigation into 9/11, and I was involved in actually doing one, as a backroom boy, I must say, more than anything else, and helping to raise awareness of this, and yet I was being attacked. That didn't really make a lot of sense to me, except when I began to realise the other important point this is connected to, and that's the energy issue, in that we've got this technology which was demonstrated on 9/11, and Dr. Wood's got a quote on her website in relation to this, that we can use this technology for good purposes or for evil purposes, and we know that on 9/11 it was used for an evil purpose, and we know that it's very powerful, and I think that, that in that evil act, we can see, once we've studied the evidence, the solution to all the energy problems that exist on the planet right now. And we can see, for example, if you take the threat of an incoming asteroid, for example, what if this weapon could be used to destroy such an asteroid before it ever even became a threat? What if it could be used to turn it to dust? I think it could. So, again, this technology could be used for that purpose and take away that, that threat which we are now being presented with on some, you know, on other occasions when we get these objects coming in close to the Earth. So, if this is very troubling and very disturbing to study, then the flip side of that is it opens up essentially what I call a new reality, in that it opens up a lot of new possibilities that somebody has got this technology and we can use it to allow ourselves things like anti-gravity technology, free energy technology, where we can use the energy to power any system that we like. So that, I think, is a key point that needs to be considered, along with the attempt to cover up this research. People read the documents on my website. They will see how the 9/11 Truth Movement, as it's called, was trying to cover up this research and discredit it and attack it. As you were sort of alluding to earlier on when you were talking to the person at the you know, at the event there at the tea party. That's exactly what we've been experiencing for 3 years, really. So that in of itself, I think, should be a sort of flag for people to see raised and go and have a look at it if they're curious to find out what's behind it.
Amazing. I just wanted to go back to that Panama deception for a minute. I said that that the name Barbara Trent was very, very familiar to me. And the reason for that is I did a little tiny, tiny, tiny bit of work with her on her film cover-up. Cover-up behind the Iran-Contra affair. It came out in 1988, and the film was immediately covered up by the mainstream media. But from the little bit of work that I did with her, I know that she is a very thorough researcher. She doesn't put in, you know, something that she just thinks. She puts in facts. So I don't know how to reach her anymore, but I'm sure that one or the other of you could find her fairly easily and ask her where she got the information that she put in about these weapons. So that would be most, most interesting.
Definitely.
Yes, thanks. And thank you to Pam for bringing that to us.
Yeah. That would be
amazing. I've not heard of it before.
So thanks, Pam. What else haven't we covered?
There's always so much to cover, and it's hard to cover, you know, have 2 minutes on something.
Oh, I know.
You're right. There is an awful lot of don't listen to her. She has no evidence. She's all speculation. It's kind of the reverse. why, if I were really so bogus, why is so much energy being spent to try to silence me?
I know. As I said, when that happens to somebody, I always know that that is where the information was. Tell me, you work with Dr. Morgan Reynolds, and is he one of the only other people that kind of sees it the way that you do?
I bet there's a lot of people out there who see it. We just don't hear from them.
Uh-huh.
They're quiet. But there are various people here and there. I don't want to name folks because that puts them at risk.
Right, I understand. And I see that you've got links to whistleblower hotlines, like Congressman Waxman. Does that do any good at all anymore?
It's providing people with, you know, the legal outlets.
Huh.
You know, they could write to me or they could write to these other people. I give them the choice and to various avenues of what their rights are.
So, in other words, if there are any whistleblowers who are actually part of this...
They can choose who they want to disclose things with.
Right. Well, I certainly wouldn't disclose things with anybody in the government. I mean, my advice would be to go to you first.
Right, right. But I'm not going to, you know, say that. I'm giving people a choice.
And who is Jerry Leaphart, and what is his role in this?
He is a wonderful lawyer who's willing to stand up and submit these legal cases for me.
Oh, my God, you found a lawyer that could do that.
Yes.
Yes.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yes, you are very lucky in that respect. And I sincerely hope that he really is on your side, you know?
Oh, yes.
I was married to a whistleblower, and we had a lawyer. And right after he lost my husband's case, he goes out and does a newspaper interview where he says that my husband is guilty of all of these things, and even more. And that's our lawyer. Yeah, it was just unbelievable.
It is hard to know who you can and can't trust.
Yeah.
And to always keep asking questions, it's something that each person has to figure out for themselves.
And it's going to be a long time before I think we ever get the truth out of anyone about what really happened on 9/11. But if people would just stop being lemmings, I mean, just because there's somebody standing up there with a bullhorn telling you what you are supposed to hear, it doesn't mean that that's the only story there is. And so people need to get out and start looking and start examining. And there's gray matter inside our skulls, and that's there for a reason. And
is it or is it?
Yeah, hopefully our kids haven't been so damaged, you know, on Ritalin and Prozac and all the other junk, you know, and GMO foods and various things that have been fed to them. Maybe their gray matter can't think the same way ours can. Oh, gosh, and we're right here at the end, darn it. Well, Dr. Wood, it's been my pleasure having you and Andrew here on the Micro Effect Radio Broadcast Network and on the day that we're being broadcast from Sykes, Idaho. So thank you very, very much for being our guest today.
Thank you so much for
having
me.
Thank you very much.
And we will be in touch for a new interview in the future. Hey, and everyone in Sykes, have a great day, and go America!
Yes.
I'll see you on the next
one. Heading in the twilight, spreading out her wings tonight. She got you jumping off the deck, shoving in the